Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to The Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona. Tonight, Tuesday, the 29th of June, 2010. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in, and you can thank yourself for what you're going to learn. And as always, when listening to The Hour of the Time, have something ready to take notes with, because you're going to learn a lot more information this evening. And tonight is part 6 in our series on If an Agent Comes Knocking. But first, the contact information. If you'd like to write The Hour of the Time, you may do so by writing Hour of the Time or HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925. Again, that's Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona 85925. The website, hourofthetime.com. That's hourofthetime.com. The studio number, 928-333-2942. That's in Arizona. Again, in Arizona, 928-333-2942. And the studio in Canada, 613-733-4324. 613-733-4324. Now, if you'd like to share research, ask important questions. When I say important, I mean don't waste my time asking me about what you should buy for your kitchenware. And I'm not making that up. I got that this weekend. I don't care what dishes you own, okay? Don't ask me ignorant crap like that. If you've got something pertinent to ask, or to share or share research or comments or send hate mail, you can email me directly at hourofthetime@hotmail.com. That's hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now again, ladies and gentlemen, tonight, Tuesday, the 29th of June, 2010, with part 6 in our series on If an Agent Comes Knocking. And we're going to go more into the electronic security, the areas to look at, with a brief recap of part 5 in our series, about data retention and deletion, covering a lot of that. Grand juries, we're going to get into that. We covered that in passing in one of the earlier broadcasts. We're going to get into a few more details of that. And tonight we do have a special research offer. It's our thanks to you for tuning in live and new for our prime time slot, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And tonight's PDF is called Capturing Heat. So email me directly, hourofthetime@hotmail.com, for the PDF book, Capturing Heat. It's a wonderful book on 5 very effective cooking technologies and how you can build these stoves yourself. They are quite simple, and I would suggest that one of you experimenters out there take a lead, and you ought to look into possibly building a rocket stove, if you will. In fact, if you look at some of the so-called Jet or a Stufaraki or the rocket stove out there, a tin can version that's for sale out in the marketplace, tin cans literally, runs $20 plus. This stove is incredibly efficient, but they also cover hay boxes, which are insulated cookers, and ironically, also work as wonderful refrigerators. Hay boxes do. But these are this is a really good book. Those of you who are wanting to learn some alternative means of cooking food, preserving food, cooking meals, either right now usage or to store them, these are some great low-tech ways with good illustrations and good explanations. So email me directly tonight and tonight only for the PDF book Capturing Heat, tonight, Tuesday, the 29th of June, 2010. It's a really good book, and I'd suggest you guys looking at the rocket stoves. I got to see one of these in use at a preparedness expo just recently. I was quite impressed. I would say it, as far as for cooking meals, it ranks on par with the Kelly kettle for boiling liquids. The Kelly kettle is another device that is, you can get it at Lee Valley Tools, which is a wonderful place to shop to get tools and good quality stuff. And the Kelly kettle is a stupendous thing. We've demonstrated that at our conferences, in fact. It is so efficient at boiling water in incredibly short time periods, vast amounts of rolling boiled water with just scraps that you can find that burn. Pine needles, twigs, whatever. And the rocket stove really takes that into the cooking arena. So it's something you can do yourself. And if you want that book, email me tonight and tonight only, and I'll send that to you. Just reference Capturing Heat. If I just get a blank email, I got some of those at the last offer, I just erased them. I'm not going to assume what you wanted because I get a lot of goofy emails that are just spam and junk sent to me. And one of you, I guess, realized after a few hours that you might ought to email back and say what you were kind of wanting, and then I did send it back to you. But just reference Capturing Heat, and everything will work out just fine. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are listener-supported here at Hour of the Time, and that is how we do our constant speaking engagements, our broadcasting, our research, the websites, and interviews. I just was in last Friday. The interviews culminated in about, 3 pages of articles. If you were to add it all up, it would almost fill up a full page and a half of a newspaper. That was just last Friday. Now, all these take, I got to go meet the reporter in question that wants to interview me, and show them, which takes copies, documentation, because I don't say it unless I can show it to them. Now, unfortunately, most of them just go, oh, okay, yeah, and shake their head. They never read any of it, but that's why there's so much piss-poor reporting in the bulk of all news media today. They don't check anything out, but I always do provide it for them, the reference material. So keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen, that we are listener supported. And a great way is to go to the website, thehourofthetime.com, and go to the shopping cart, the Hot Shop. And there you'll see literally hundreds and hundreds of individual broadcasts that you can mix and match on an order in MP3 format, topical series that are packaged together, entire collections that contain hundreds and hundreds of hours of broadcasting, PDF and research literature and materials in packages, and DVD presentations. And one of the other great ways, and this is a reminder to you guys that out there in the Hot Club, June's almost up, so make sure you get your Hot Club for June donations in. But the Hot Club is a wonderful way to donate to the Hour of the Times overhead and operation at the same time. You get in return at the end of the month, of course, the month in question, you get the broadcast from all the Monday through Friday's prime time slot, which is 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, Monday through Friday. All of those broadcast in MP3 format, and then all the literature that we either had for the research offers on the air or we used here and mentioned them during articles and broadcasts, all on one disc. So you're going to get numerous MP3 broadcast, which is a lot of hours of listening, a lot of hours, the entire, like I say, prime time slot, Monday through Friday for the entire month, all gathered up, and research materials, oodles of those. for your $40 donation. So it's a great way for you to help Hour of the Time, and you get a tremendous amount of research, literature, and audio for your library, education, studies, etc. Now, after this musical break, ladies and gentlemen, be prepared to take notes, and we'll continue on again tonight, part 6 in our series, If an Agent Comes Knocking, emphasizing tonight more electronic security, grand juries, etc. Ladies and gentlemen, your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time, Tuesday, the 29th of June, 2010. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we left off in the part 5 of this series talking about how you need to know about your internet service providers. Read their privacy policies in detail and thoroughly. In fact, any electronic service you're considering getting involved in, read everything there. Now, some ISPs have actually tailored their services towards people heavily involved in politics, restoration, of a constitutional government and freedom, and they offer a lot stronger privacy protections. And they claim, at least, to be more resistant to government snooping. Now, as a policy, they can do that. It doesn't mean that ultimately if the entire NSA, CIA, FBI, everybody comes down on you and wants to read your transmissions, they're going to crack the codes and get in and do it. Trust me. There's no code written, no encrypting done before there's a solution. They're always at the same time. Cracking the code is basically done identical unless you go into the really good hardcore encryption, and I would reference our Covered Writing audio series if you want to learn about that. Now, that is really, really deep, hard encryption that can really give you some hard and good, solid privacy. Our Covered Writing, the art of Covered Writing. We did one or two broadcasts on that, a couple, in fact. So, look into that. Now, a lot of people run away and run around after this anti-spyware or antiviral programming, and if you're going to do those, you need to regularly update them, okay? Spyware, if it's used to its full capabilities, can breach all of your electronic security, essentially. Logging every website that you visit, for instance, every keystroke on your machine, but as we covered years ago, I did personally on the air, I mean years ago, about 9 years ago now, or eight or 9 years ago, you had Operation Keystroke, Golden Keystroke, Magic Lantern, and keystroke encryption and decryption technology was officially hired out and researched by the FBI, okay? Now, some of the anti-spyware companies out there will claim they treat government spyware the same as any other spyware. But again, go back to the essentials, as we covered in part 5 of this series and part 4 of this series, and we gave you quotes right from attorney and the chief prosecutor from the state of New York. If you don't want it known, don't say it, and definitely don't email it, because all it does is set you up to have everything tracked and logged. Now, one thing I've stressed throughout this series, in the security of your organizations and groups out there, you have to have a data retention or deletion policy in your standard operating procedures, in your bylaws, whatever little things that you write for show or for new members or whatever, that establishes. Because this, you can be called on this later on. So you have to have it in writing that, yes, we destroy and shred and burn everything every day. So, oh, too bad we can't provide it to you. Here it is in our SOP, our data retention and deletion policy. Here it is, our privacy policy. And it's been approved, and we've all agreed upon that as members, that we're not telling you their names anyway. But you're not getting any info because we've agreed to this 3 years ago, and it's a standing order. So, it happens the same way with electronic data, okay? Nobody out there, a non-government organization, an NGO, private organizations that are spooking into your affairs, agencies, they can't get what doesn't exist. So you have to establish that data retention policy where you review and delete old files on a consistent basis. Don't just selectively destroy documents or old electronic data. Pick your time frame, pick your criteria, and stick to it. Stick to it ardently. Okay? And examples that have been given out there is that you may have different schedules for different types of data. You might consider deleting computer files every 2 months of some given form, whatever the file might be, articles you wrote, whatever. Okay. You might delete all emails every 2 weeks, delete any web browser logs every 2 days. But whatever you choose, okay, stick with it. Because do you really need 3 years of emails? If it's so controversial it goes hand in hand with the research policy or an investigation that you're doing in your organization, then you should have distilled that information into the body of a text that's in an encrypted drive anyway and already. Okay? So think about that. My web logs and emails and all of that are much shorter time frames, and that's just an example I gave you. That was given actually at a corporate seminar, and their gist was a different angle. Their gist was the amount of data a company at every terminal, every employee would build up on the company servers, and how quickly it just ate up space for really no reason. So they created these data retention policies simply as a management issue of space and time, and for the IT technicians. But take it from the other way. Again, somebody that's after you for no good reason because you're trying to reinforce and reestablish all our freedoms. You're researching and talking about hot topics. You're around all the time talking about privacy and property rights, let's say, like a lot of us do. Speaking about the massive amount of fraud and ill-informed so-called elected officials out there, and you come under attack, but again, they can't get what doesn't exist. So think about that, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you don't want to destroy anything that has been subpoenaed, okay? So if you do, so you run the risk of an obstruction of justice charge, okay? Against you personally, okay? And many others in your organization, okay? Maybe all the officers and board members, or whatever you've arranged, it's just you and some buddies get together, okay? Now, again, if you receive a subpoena and you haven't had it quashed yet, but guess what? If you already had a written record of your data retention policy, then you have protection. You, all the officers, all your friends, all your allies, and your organization against any accusations of destroying evidence. You already had it in writing. It's something that was established, and you do it all the time, every day or every 2 days or whatever you choose to do. I do it all the time. I mean all the time. Okay? That's my preference. I don't find it to be a lot of work at all if you do it all the time. And you just don't have it there. The same as orders. Unless somebody says, I want you to keep my address. Well, they all get destroyed. Okay? You write me, it gets burned after it's taken care of. So, and the people sometimes even email or call later like, oh, hey, send me this new deal. You've got my address, and hang up or just sign off their email. No, I don't. If you didn't tell me you, for some odd reason you wanted me to keep all your information, I don't. So that's how, what in what regard we respect that privacy, and we know the security around it and how important it is, ladies and gentlemen. If you look at when Bill was murdered, one of the first things that happened was, well, besides everybody in the world trying to sue me for ungodly and unknown reasons, but one of the things that occurred was, for instance, the state of Oklahoma's attorney's office wanted to get all the subscriber list from Veritas and internet information subscribers to website updates, etc. They also had warrants they wanted to fulfill. I got all of them quashed, the warrants thrown out, the search warrants, the possession warrants, the subpoenas, all of that thrown out due to a few things. A, jurisdiction, or and typically lack thereof in most people's cases. Or B, we didn't even have the data to start with. Okay? The stuff was destroyed. And that protected people involved around our the time. Oklahoma, their venture was a small segment in the attorney's office for the state, wanted to show some vast conspiratorial connection between our the time and Timothy McVeigh. Okay, so they figured this is the chance to go in and get everything. But the warrants went so far that I got thrown out, completely thrown out, as to seize from Hour of the Time Studios and headquarters all means of recording any thoughts or correspondence of any form, any device that could record those means, transcribe those means, or store those means. That would literally mean every VCR tape, for instance, every audio tape, every machine that ran those tapes that would hence do the recording, all records, all computers, all CPUs, all hard drives. That, I mean, they were crazy. A search warrant, mind you, is crazy as all hell after they've murdered somebody. So what are they going to do, go to trial? No. Obviously, the motive there was to get information. And that was the only motive possible. You can't have a trial when you've already murdered the person. So it wasn't like there was critical investigative evidence being subpoenaed. It was strictly data gathering, name gathering, list making, dossier making. Got all of that thrown out because A, know the jurisdiction, know your rights, and B, have data retention and deletion policies that cover you, and I could not be affected because those policies were known, and this stuff was just gone. Okay, that is a good way to run things, ladies and gentlemen. I speak from experience, trust me, because had the warrants gone through, it would have just been incredible. It would have been anything, a pad of paper, because you could have wrote down a thought or a memo on it. Or a correspondence on it. That's literally how deep it was going. Any machine that could have recorded anything. A tape deck, a mixing board, a CPU. Like I say, it went that crazy fanatical trying to go after us. Nothing was gotten. Okay? Because I defended it. And that's what you and your organizations and your allies need to do as well. Okay? So, after this musical break, ladies and gentlemen, now we've kind of left the electronics area. We're going to get into what a lot of people don't even understand what a grand jury is. Now, this isn't, we've done hours and hours of programming already on the due constitutional authority and role that a grand jury plays. That is not what this next segment in the series is about. It's more about how do they rubber stamp things, how are they used and manipulated to attack people, and how are grand jury summons, subpoenas, etc., how do they come about? How they're used against you. That's what this is about. Not the whole historical evidence of a constitutionally profound and established grand jury. Okay?
Thank you.
ladies and gentlemen. Again, your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time tonight, Tuesday, the 29th of June, 2010. And tonight's thank you, free research offer from us to you for tuning in to our live primetime slot in the evening is a PDF. If you email me directly, hourofthetime@hotmail.com, called Capturing Heat. And it goes over five really neat areas of interest or scientific processes and devices that you can build to that are alternative devices, simple to build, for you to cook with or even heat a home or a shelter with. Conical cookers, the jet stoves or rocket stoves. There's a whole set of diagrams, etc., that I think you'll find really interesting, even up to 55-gallon drum rocket stoves, just incredibly fast, intense, high usage and concentration of the heat available. Hay boxes, another one covered. So I think you're going to really like it, and it'll come in very handy for those of you who want to be able to be more on their own 2 feet, more freedom-oriented, independent, and solution-oriented. The very gist of our programming, ladies and gentlemen. This isn't infotainment like some people enjoy throwing around the airwaves and internet out there, like many of the PAY patriots out there that even brag about being infotainment. This is solution-oriented programming, ladies and gentlemen, at Hour of the Time. And don't forget, the information you get here, you don't get anywhere else, okay? We don't have to break every 4 minutes for commercials. We're not selling you rip-off, overpriced, so-called herbal remedies and magic liquids and magic steam out of the air, water distiller gatherers, or any of that overpriced coinage. We give you solutions. Now, remember, we're listener-supported, ladies and gentlemen. We can continue to do that over all these years and down in the future and expand our operations with your help. Now, to the grand juries, this is just a rough synopsis, ladies and gentlemen, and it's not even a judgment call on the way they behave nowadays, because we know that they're used basically like a witch hunting tool of prosecutors nowadays. And this isn't to try to recap the hours and hours of broadcasting and research and written articles we've done at Hour of the Time on the authority and real constitutional role of a grand jury. This is just telling you how it is nowadays and how you need to defend yourself. And a grand jury is essentially, if you don't know, basically just a panel of citizens of wherever you might be from, a citizen of your state or whatever, brought together to investigate crimes and issue indictments. That's just a real cursory overview. Now, in their original conception, grand juries were staunchly freedom-oriented. In Old England, for instance, they served as a buffer between the citizenry of England and the monarch and the monarch's prosecutors. In early America, any citizen could bring an allegation of wrongdoing to the original grand jury, and the grand jury could indict after investigation and a vote. However, today, ladies and gentlemen, they are a political tool. Modern-day grand juries are obviously very different. Today, the cases are brought up to a grand jury, guess what, by the prosecutor or a prosecutor. The prosecutor who brings up the case to the grand jury picks the witnesses and gets to ask the questions. Witnesses are not even allowed to have a lawyer present. There's no judge present. The prosecutor drafts the charges, reads them to the grand jury. There's no requirement that members be instructed. And that's, you know, all this is debatable. I'm just telling you what's happening, okay, in real life out there. And grand jury members aren't even screened for bias. Now, since the prosecutor solely is orchestrating all the proceedings, from the draft to the witnesses to no lawyer present for witnesses to the charges to how they're read to the grand jury to who sits on it, It's no surprise that they almost always simply serve, that is, grand juries nowadays, as a rubber stamp for prosecution. That's all they typically serve anymore. And when you see a grand jury indictment, remember that from the very beginning, the whole thing was orchestrated by a prosecutor. Okay, so yes, it is a severe indictment, but keep an open mind to how it was orchestrated from the very first step nowadays. Maybe it's not that big of an indictment when, if you think on a higher, like a more moral level or more practical level. Okay, yes, Joe Snuffy down the street had a grand jury indictment handed down against him. Well, if the prosecutor is rigged every step of the way, and who's going to get to talk and who can't defend themselves, and who is biased on the grand jury that he personally picked, well, he's probably going to get his prosecution. So think about that. In fact, a chief judge in New York, former chief judge, obviously, once famously noted that any prosecutor that wanted to could indict a ham sandwich. And that was a famous thing when that came out. Now, in the rare event that a grand jury does not indict, and that is a rare event nowadays, guess what? That same prosecutor can simply impanel a different grand jury and seek an indictment before the new grand jury with the same charges again. Yes, every bit of this is wrong. I'm not telling you it's right. I'm not promoting. I'm just being factual with you so you can understand where this is going. Now, in political cases, and I use that term just for lack of a better word, but cases against people, they really, grand juries have been turned into an executioner to fulfill witch hunts against people and organizations. Prosecutors bring in witnesses and attempt to get them to snitch, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes called activist witnesses, but maybe witnesses in your group or that are around your group, and they try to get them to snitch on you and your operations with the threat of jail time if they refuse to cooperate with the grand jury. Okay? And it's very critical that you understand how all this works, ladies and gentlemen, what your rights are, what rights you can exercise, how to resist a grand jury. Okay? Many rights that people take for granted do not exist for grand jury witnesses. Okay? Grand jury witnesses nowadays have no right to be represented by an attorney and no right to a jury trial if they're threatened with jail. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it is absolutely wrong and unconstitutional, but that's how it's going nowadays. And until we have a full restoration of our Constitution and our Republic and freedoms, that is what you have to know. You have to know how it works so you can defend yourself. Grand jury witnesses do retain the right against self-incrimination sometimes. But nonetheless, they can still be forced to snitch, rat, and drop the dime on themselves and others in exchange for immunity from prosecution and punishment. Okay? Immunity, remember, only protects the witnesses. Others can still be prosecuted. So keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. Now, what is a grand jury subpoena? Okay? What do you do? Someone shows up with one. Well, grand jury subpoenas are served by law enforcement agents, okay? Agents of some given agency. Now, the thing is that it's getting so out of hand nowadays that agents of agencies that supposedly are not involved in law enforcement at all, they just work at some federal level, theoretically, are issuing grand jury subpoenas. But usually it's a police officer, a federal marshal, etc., that does bring the subpoena. Now, it must be personally served on you. It has to be handed to you. If you refuse to grab it or touch it, it has to be placed near you. When some scumbags, after Bill was murdered, wanted to sue me, somehow I became guilty, or they tried to make me guilty, of Officer Marinas, who was shot by someone. It was never proven, actually, that it was Bill at all. But Officer Marinas, that was on the hill that night, suffered gunfire wounds. Somehow, because I was getting the house on the market for the benefit of the beneficiaries as per all the trusts that were notarized and signed by Bill and Annie and the trust attorneys and myself. And it was clearly in the documents. That's all I was doing. I wasn't getting paid for it. I was dispensing of the home so that the beneficiaries would receive their benefit if Bill was killed. That could be for any reason, a car wreck, whatever. We know the case here. Somehow I became a criminal in this, and I was supposedly at wrong and in party for that officer's wounds. Okay? So they get him and his just derelict of a wife, in fact, get help from the Fraternal Order, guess what? Fraternal Order of Police, to file a $2.1 million lawsuit on me. Well, we get deliveries from whoever that shows up to deliver stuff at the studio for CDs, padded envelopes, whatever. It's not always a UPS truck or a FedEx. Courier stuff comes, etc. And people come by, would come by the studio all the time for research or to bring something by, whatever. So you didn't know everybody that showed up, but you always had to be leery and on guard. And what they did was the gentleman just pulled up in what looked like a delivery truck. I didn't pay much attention, but I didn't also let him in the studio either. I talked, and in fact, it made him very nervous through the steel, heavy-duty security doors, screening, very difficult for them to see in. He said, well, you're making me real nervous. I wish you'd open the door. And I said, oh, well, I can hear you. What do you got? Well, as he moved, I saw on his clipboard he had a picture of me that had been printed out. Just a picture of me from downtown. I was being sought, tracked, photographed all the time. And I eventually did get these discs that I was initially told didn't exist. Later on, they suddenly reappeared, even though they weren't given to me in my first public records request, I did eventually get them. They did exist. And in this, so he had gotten hold of this picture. So he knew what I looked like, and that's really why he wanted me to open the door. Well, when he felt, though, that he had enough information, he was at the right place, he just stuck an envelope, tried to jam it in the door jamb, and he hauled ass quick, buddy. He was nervous. So I didn't touch it. I called some local law enforcement who had helped us out with a lot of the defense of the studio against, like, Oklahoma City, or excuse me, state of Oklahoma that I mentioned earlier, and advice from their, you know, prosecutors, etc., like that, and their legal defense teams and their law enforcement experience in general. And so I was directed on which ways to go, and I did get it quashed, and I did have great help from the trust attorneys, of course, because they knew it was all bogus, stupid crap, and we did such a wonderful job. That was just one of many lawsuits filed against me in the hour of the time that we defeated. We defeated all of them. But that was just one of many that simultaneously came at us from every direction. But we knew our rights. We knew how to defend ourselves. We got them quashed and didn't even go to court for that one, in fact. Because their charges, their line of rationale, their so-called evidence, then stuff they wanted me to hand over, which they didn't have the legal right to ask me for anyway, like all the trust documents for the beneficiaries, as in Bill's daughters, I didn't have to do any of that. And I knew those rights as my proper role as a fiduciary for the trust. Okay? And these are things that helped defend myself and why I didn't go to jail. Okay? And people's names and contracts and agreements weren't compromised, and addresses and activities with us. So when that is their theory, when they just say place it near you, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, now remember though, too, though, one thing to remember is a grand jury subpoena does not give some representative or agent of an agency the right to search a home, office, car, anywhere else. It doesn't require you to relinquish any documents or say anything at all at that time. They like it when you do, but it doesn't require any of that, okay? It only requires you to do something on the future date stated on the subpoena. That is it. Okay? If at all you are in doubt whatsoever about what to do, and some agent of an agency shows up with a subpoena, they're claiming it is, whatever, don't do anything else. Just, okay, leave it, whatever, okay? Whatever you feel is best for you. Maybe they try to jam it in your door jam like they did to me, and then they run away as quick as they can, whatever. But don't consent to a search. Don't invite them into your home or business or office for any reason whatsoever. Do not answer any questions whatsoever. Okay? That is your best line of defense. And then immediately, depending on what your protocol is, you can seek, I go get counsel. Okay? But maybe you go look for a lawyer. But whatever you do, do that next immediately. And again, make sure if this interaction, the subpoena trying to be served upon you, seems to be going to be drug out, and you have the ability whatsoever to have a witness available through all this exchange and interaction, then do so. Hey, Joe, come out of your cubicle and come over here to the front door. Do it. Get a camera rolling. Whatever you have to do, a voice recorder, whatever. Okay? Now, what are some of the options? They throw it on your porch and run. Okay? So you've received this grand jury subpoena. And there's typically three options. Typically, you can move to quash the subpoena. You can comply with the subpoena. Or you can refuse to comply. Now, if you receive a subpoena, again, if it's your thing, go get an attorney. I would seek counsel, but do it as soon as possible and discuss each of these options in detail with whatever you sought out. Maybe your group already has some kind of legal advisor or branch or somebody on retainer. Then you need to get with them ASAP, okay? Now, complying with, and remember, discuss all these options in detail. Discuss all this, and complying with the subpoena is obviously pretty straightforward. Okay. Basically, you arrive at the date, time, and location, and you answer the prosecutor's questions. It's pretty much that simple. Okay. Now, depending on the type of subpoena, okay, you may also have one that is a subpoena ducis, in which you have to show up on the date, time, and location stated, with documents or other evidence that was required. See, the other one is subpoena ad testificatum, or here, hence the words, a subpoena of testimony. Okay, and that's why you showed up date, time, location, answer the prosecutor's questions. Now, the subpoena ducis show up on the date, time, and location with documents and other evidence that was required. Okay, now, here, depending on your, I know which way I go, but I can't tell you in your situation when suddenly you have a subpoena on your front door, because I won't be there probably, seeing it all happen, I can't tell you what you should do. All this and your friends and group should have already discussed this. If you comply with the subpoena, you do avoid the possibility of being punished for ignoring it, okay? However, complying with the subpoena can get you, ladies and gentlemen, to a different type of trouble. If you're the target of a witch hunt investigation, complying with the subpoena may actually provide an NGO, a private firm, a corporation, or some government agency with information it might need to charge and convict you. Okay? An investigation you weren't even aware of. Okay? You might also place someone else in jeopardy by complying with the subpoena. So you have to weigh all that, ladies and gentlemen. So if you receive the subpoena, speak before you, with whatever your line of attack is, lawyers, counsel, somebody that you already have on retainer, whatever, immediately and before you take any action. If it is politically motivated, agenda-driven, witch hunt-driven subpoena, it is best to speak to someone who is familiar with criminal defense and grand jury work then, okay? Because you won't be the first one, trust me, okay? Because somebody who's not familiar with the grand juries and criminal defense workings in a grand jury subpoena will probably just tell you, well, go ahead and be a snitch, okay? Now, you must also realize that most, or I should, many, so, but a very large many, so, but technically not most, so-called snitches end up serving many, many years in prison, okay? In fact, oftentimes as much prison time as everybody they dropped the rat on. So keep all that in mind. Grand jury proceedings are secret, okay? Plain and simple. Get used to it, okay? Oftentimes, people in an organization or group don't even know when a grand jury investigation is being pursued, okay? As a result, many in an organization believe that they should publicize the fact that they've received a subpoena, okay? And this may be an effective tactic for you and your group to explore with your counsel or attorney if you do receive a subpoena. Advertise the hell out of it. May be a very good move for you, okay? Now, you can also quash a grand jury subpoena. Okay, you can challenge the subpoena in court by a motion to quash the subpoena. We talked about that before. It means that a court declares it null and void, okay? Now, a court will typically only grant a motion to quash if there is sufficient legal basis. Misidentification. Guess what one of the big ones is, though, besides misidentification? Protected privilege. Unlawful basis for the proceedings. But one of the very biggest ones is, guess what? Lack of jurisdiction. Okay? Now, even if you can't, for some reason, successfully quash a subpoena, litigating a motion to quash in court can buy you some time for you and your team to get organized. And time is very important, especially if you don't, for some reason, plan on cooperating with the grand jury. Because non-cooperation can very likely lead you right to jail. And grand juries can last months, 18 months, who knows. And whatever time is spent litigating the motion to quash may save you the experience of spending that entire period in jail while the grand jury investigates, okay? Okay, now, the subpoena that demands evidence, subpoena ducis, okay, a motion, there's little to lose by filing a motion to quash a subpoena ducis, okay, and that's, again, the one that demands you bring the evidence as well, besides the date, time, location, okay. Now, the type which demand testimony, that can present problems. There's at least one federal circuit court and circuit court ruling that you lose any objections that was not raised in the original motion to quash, okay? So you should not waive any of your objections if you're going to go for a quashing of a testimonial subpoena, okay? Especially because you may not know what your objections are until you are asked a particular question, right? So until you're asked everything, you can't know what you object to. So don't ever waive that right, okay? Never, never, never waive your objections, okay? Now, a good defense, grand jury, or politically oriented attorney will be able to provide you or counsel, if that's your route, that's my route, whether moving to quash a subpoena is a good idea or not in your particular circumstances. Again, subpoena ducis, just do it, okay? Very little to lose. And even one that is the subpoena testimony, I would still do it, personally. That's up to you. Okay, now, there's a couple ways, because there's always that third area we talked about, refusing to comply. Okay, now there's basically two ways, and it's pretty obvious. Refuse to show up, or refuse to answer any of the prosecutor's questions. Now, if you simply just refuse to show up for your testimony, you're probably going to be found in contempt by some agency, okay? And their little minions. And then some agency will then get a warrant issued to arrest you and jail you until you do testify or until the grand jury expires. Months and months and months and months away. Okay? If your testimony wasn't particularly important to the prosecutor, they may not take any action at all. So you better weigh all that in your particular circumstances before you make that decision. Okay? If you do appear to testify, you will not be allowed to have an attorney present. Face the fact. Okay? But you can have your attorney or counsel, if that's what you want to do, just outside the room. Okay? And you can consult with your counsel or attorney, him or her, whatever it is that you and your group or whatever has already done or arranged or worked on after every question. Okay? Now, some courts and courtrooms and circuits and regions have said, well, every few questions you can go out and consult with them, but typically it's you can consult after every single question with your counsel or lawyer or attorney. Okay? Right outside the room. Okay? Do that, okay? Now, because you retained, hopefully, your Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination, you can refuse to answer the prosecutor's questions by saying, I invoke my Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination after every single question. Now, more at this point, the prosecutor may just dismiss you, okay? Or they may seek to grant you immunity. Okay? Immunity prevents the witness from having criminal charges brought on the basis of the grand jury testimony. A judge has to approve a grant of immunity as well. Now, a prosecutor can get a judge to approve a grant of immunity. Okay? Otherwise, a witness is brought before a judge who, upon the prosecutor's request, virtually always grants that immunity. If you continue to refuse to answer questions after being granted immunity, the prosecutor can bring you before the judge, and the judge can order you to testify. And if you continue to refuse, the judge will probably just have you thrown in jail for contempt. Okay, so that's typically the steps they'll do. You refuse it. Immunity will prevent the witness from having criminal charges brought upon him, at least for the basis, of the grand jury testimony. The prosecutor can ask the judge to grant you immunity, then proceed to question you again. If you refuse still, at that point, the judge is probably going to hit you with contempt, okay, if you've been granted immunity at this point. Just being honest, is it fair, right, correct, constitutional? No, just telling you how it works. Now, witnesses who refuse to provide physical exemplars, and those are samples of hair writing, hair, appearance in a lineup, documents, etc., 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 upon the request of a grand jury, may also be jailed for contempt. Just civil contempt, just so you know. And those, again, are called physical exemplars. Samples, again, of handwriting, hair, appearances in a lineup, documents, what have you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's where we'll wrap up tonight's part 6, If an Agent Comes Knocking, in this series tonight, Tuesday the 29th of June, 2010. Don't forget, the Hour of the Time is listener-supported, and we can't continually expand and do research without your support, ladies and gentlemen. Go to the website, hourofthetime.com, and go to the Hot Shop. Look at the materials that are available for your donations. Join the Hot Club. And don't forget, this evening, and this evening's only, special research offer for those of you tuning in new and live is Capturing Heat. You can email me directly for that booklet at hourofthetime@hotmail.com. And I hope everyone took notes and has a safe and a studious evening.